This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
53 cases of measles in the Chicago area. Not something I thought I'd be saying in 2024. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The majority of cases stemmed from a migrant shelter on Halsted Street in Pilsen. Since the first case was reported, the city has helped vaccinate over 5,000 people against the virus. Officials note that it doesn't mean migrants are bringing measles to the city, that they're just a vulnerable population. Chicago residents are also being asked to check if they and their families are up to date with the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines. So are you up to date on your vaccines? And how can you check your records if, for instance, you don't have access to them? I sat down with Dr. David Nguyen, a pediatrics and infectious disease specialist at Rush University Medical Group, for some answers. And Dr. Nguyen starts with his thoughts on the fact that we have 53 cases of measles in this area.
It worries me in the sense that it increases the chance that people who are susceptible, people who are not vaccinated, might have more opportunities to be exposed to measles and get the disease. But anybody who has received the vaccine, which is probably the majority of people in the area, overwhelming majority of people in the area, probably don't need to worry about getting the disease in that case.
As you talk about getting the disease, can you describe for us, how does measles spread?
So measles is one of the most contagious diseases out there. 90% of people who are susceptible and exposed will get the virus and probably have the disease. It can be spread in the air. It can linger up into air spaces up to 2 hours, maybe even a little bit longer. And people don't actually know that they will have the disease for another week or maybe even 2 weeks until after exposure. And then the first few days of symptoms are usually nonspecific: fever, cough, runny nose. You might think you just have a cold, but in that time you are contagious. And then the characteristic measles rash shows up about 4 days in. And by that time you've spread the virus around
right,
a little bit.
Without knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how this outbreak started, Doctor. Cases have been traced to a migrant shelter in Pilsen. Chicago Department of Public Health Commissioner Dr. Olusinbo Ige said, quote, "New arrivals didn't bring measles to Chicago. It was circulating here and they are vulnerable to it because many come from countries where they didn't receive the vaccinations that we do in the United States," end quote. So I want you to talk about that point a little bit more, Dr. Nguyen.
It's a very important point.
Yes.
Before the migrant, the shelter cases were reported, there were cases in Chicago even earlier this year, or in the county at least, of measles in people who were not in these areas. And like I said, the incubation period of measles is 1 to 2 weeks, and many of them have been here much longer than that. So they did not bring measles at all. They were susceptible because they were either under vaccinated, not vaccinated, and got the disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm glad you cleared that up because some people might have been under the impression that migrants brought measles here, and that's simply not true. We should note that since the first case, the city's vaccinated over 5,000 new arrivals. So is vaccinating 5,000 people going to make a difference?
Yes, it will make a difference definitely for the individual people who get the vaccinations. That will be much likely to be protected from getting measles. In terms of stopping the circulation of measles, that's going to need everybody in the area to pitch in for that, because Measles is so contagious that we need a very high level of population immunity. The estimate is around 95% to stop the circulation of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And even a little bit under. And the thought is that there's probably about 93% of the Chicagoland population vaccinated. Even that little bit of a dip is enough to keep the virus passing around just because it's so contagious, like I said.
Yeah. Yeah. There are still thousands of people in the city, including children, who aren't up to date with their MMR vaccine. And that's according to Dr. Ige. So just so we're clear, who gets the measles vaccines? It's not only for kids, is it?
No, but most people are vaccinated as children. There's been a vaccine available for several decades now. And the CDC recommends that the first dose is given at the 1 year of age. And then there's usually a follow-up dose around 4 to 5. I usually say before entering preschool or kindergarten.
Yeah.
And that's really to catch those people who may not have responded to that first vaccine.
I see.
It can be given a little bit earlier, as young as 6 months. And we usually say that those are recommended for anybody traveling with children that are 6 to 12 months to an area where measles might be in an outbreak or circulating a lot.
So a second dose is necessary, it sounds like, because city officials did.
Yes.
Yeah, city officials are recommending folks at the shelter get a second one 28 days after the first shot.
That's the minimum time between the vaccines. But obviously, it's okay if you get it a little bit after, as long as you get the two.
Are there specific situations where adults would need to be vaccinated?
Really, only if you've never had the vaccine before.
Where can people get the vaccine? Does it have to be at your primary care doctor?
No, most primary care doctors will carry it, though, especially pediatric offices. And then there are probably vaccines available through the city, but I probably should ask the city about that.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
So Chicago residents, as I mentioned, Doctor, they're being asked to make sure that they're up to date on their vaccines. But I'm curious what the easiest way to do that is, especially for folks who aren't sure.
Well, hopefully your doctor has a record of the vaccines. And if you've moved or changed doctors, you should hopefully be able to request the previous office, you know, transfer the records to your current doctor's office. A lot of offices have electronic medical records these days. Mm-hmm. And so there might be an app, like the MyChart app, for example,
yes.
Where that record may be present. So you would just need to get into that and then you can download that. Other than that, you know, schools will keep a record of the vaccines. I actually carry the same record that I have since medical school, just because they compiled it all in one place for me to just show everybody. Outside of that, if you are in Illinois, or if you receive the vaccines in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
there is an IDPH tool called VerifyVax. If you go on the IDPH website or mm-hmm. look for VerifyVax, it's a few steps. You have to just verify who you are. And if you've ever received a vaccine in Illinois, the record probably is in there.
So, you know, I'm someone who's in the last decade lived in 4 states. So I've changed primary care doctors quite a bit. Same with my kids have changed pediatricians. What would make it easier for us to not lose track of our records?
Nothing beats a hard copy. So if you can at least try and keep a hard copy with your file somewhere, that would be great, you know, especially for kids. The majority of pediatric or childhood vaccinations are going to be given before the age of 5. So that's a very, you know, high density time to keep track of those vaccines. And then after that, kids might receive another set of vaccines around, I call them middle school vaccines, and then maybe another set before college. And colleges will often need people to have a record of their vaccine. So it's very important to keep. I think nothing beats a hard copy, but, you know, you have those electronic backups now these days
right.
to hopefully keep track of things.
For sure. Yeah, I always would try to get some sort of printout before I left that particular state. Tell me, what's a titer test? Is that an option?
Yeah. So a titer test is looking for the antibody response to a virus or an infection. And so there is a measles titer test that people can get. It's probably unnecessary if you've been able to confirm that you've gotten two measles vaccines if you're older than 5 years old. But, you know, for anybody who, if it's really having trouble finding it and you're not sure and, you know, you want to know, it's possible to probably try and get a measles titer test to see if you have that antibody response. And if it's negative, you can go try and get another vaccine.
Yeah. I recently went to my primary care doctor for my annual physical, but it had been a little longer than a year since my last checkup. And I had since, the doctor hadn't seen me since I entered a new age group. So there was a bunch of tests, but she also gave me a Tdap vaccine and mentioned whooping cough. And I was very confused in the moment, but I didn't question it. And I complied. I mean, was that necessary? And talk more about the vaccines that are due in our, you know, different age groups, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah. So Tdap, you'll need that every 10 years or so to keep up the immunity for the tetanus and the pertussis. The tetanus is more for you. You know, if you get a wound and that could get infected by the tetanus bacteria. The pertussis, I mean, that's also for you, too. Pertussis isn't fun for adults, but it's especially deadly to children, young children like babies. If you see usually our gynecologists or obstetrician gynecologists will make sure that households are up to date on that for the pertussis part because they don't want the baby after getting born to be exposed to pertussis, just to keep up with that. So yeah, I got my 10-year boost, I think a year or two ago, as I was realizing a lot of my friends were having kids and I needed to be protected for their sake.
A colleague of mine was given the first two shingles vaccinations about a year ago. This person is in their 50s. They say that they dropped the ball and forgot to get that second shot within 6 months. So is it too late to get that second shot of the shingles vaccine?
Yeah, not necessarily. But yeah, that's one of the other vaccines of adulthood that is recommended. Mm-hmm. Shingles is not pleasant. It's especially recommended for people who actually had chicken pox as kids, which actually includes me, who are over 50, because then your immune system can get a little weaker as you get older. And then you may get shingles, which is just reactivation of that chicken pox virus.
Right. Well, doctor, tell us, is there a place that folks can go to sort of get schedule information for these vaccines at any age?
Yeah, the CDC has vaccine schedules and that's nicely organized into children and adults. A couple important ones would be yearly flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. I know people still say, you know, they can get sick and get the flu afterwards. But if you get the flu vaccine, you're much less likely to have severe complications from the flu, shorter hospitalizations, right, things like that. And then the bacterial pneumonia vaccine or pneumococcal vaccine. That's especially important for people with certain conditions.
Right.
For example, heart disease, diabetes, asthma. You can have a lot of complications from pneumonia, bacterial pneumonia, when you have those conditions. So that's why we recommend those in certain groups of people for certain ages.
That's Dr. David Wynn, pediatrics and infectious disease specialist at Rush University Medical Center. Thank you so much for taking the time, doctor. Really helpful.
Well, thanks for having me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yason, edited by Linnea Dominic, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Now, if there is a health topic that you would like us to cover here on Reset, just email us, reset@wbez.org, or you can leave us a voicemail at 888-915-9945. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk again tomorrow.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.